This episode contains graphic descriptions of YouTube Kids content that is unsuitable for people under 16. Please use your discretion and take care while listening. Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? Well, they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. How do we prepare children to thrive in a world dominated by digital media? Returning to the podcast this week is Carrie Sutton, author of Raising a Mentally Fit Generation, speaker, and internationally recognised early childhood consultant. With over 30 years of experience in education, much of it focused on early childhood and diverse needs, Carrie has dedicated her career to improving the mental health and well-being of our children. She's currently completing a PhD, writing her thesis, Parents, Children and Online Safety, Building Digital Resilience. It's a subject Carrie is deeply passionate about after witnessing firsthand the negative impacts of digital media on young people over the past 15 years. Whilst she acknowledges the value of technology, Carrie believes we must equip children with the tools, skills, and strategies they need to navigate the digital landscape. Great to have you back. What concerns you the most about our children's digital interactions?
The first conversation you and I had when you started this was around resilience and that we needed to teach our children the habits of mind that help them build psychological well-being and emotional well-being. Well, what I've been seeing is that this is now a whole new space. We need to be starting to teach children the skills that they've got to be healthy digitally, understand their digital footprints. What does that look like? Now, I'm not saying that this can happen in a preschool age child, but what we can do is have conversations with children. And how do we navigate that? Because they're going to be exposed to digital media, they're exposed all the time. Whether you give them an iPhone, whether they've been on YouTube. There were two calls I got when I was an advisor with working with families who had children who had diverse needs. The first call was around COVID time, just before COVID. The second call came during COVID time. The first call was around Peppa Pig. It was on YouTube. Was YouTube Kids, they knew what their child was doing because they looked and saw it's Peppa Pig or saw that on the cartoon, and they were doing other things around the house, which is what parents do because we're very busy people. And so you think and trust that the child is engaging with educational content or with content that at least you've seen, you know what Peppa Pig, we've read the stories, we know what Peppa Pig gets up to. This cartoon, unfortunately, turned out to be Peppa Pig that stabbed her friends, that ran over people, that was ghoulish. And the only way the parent knew about that was she walked past again and saw this version and went, what the? It didn't snatch it from the child, but she said to talk to the child and said, look, is this what Peppa? She said, no, and it's scary, mummy, and I didn't know how to shut it off. But the child was not traumatized, but the child had seen things that were not appropriate for small children, young children to see. The second call came during COVID times, and this was more like a grade 3 or 4 child, again, watching on YouTube Kids. This looked like a cool kid playing one of those level up games. So you'd work through things, work through mazes, do different things. Looks really cool. The parent thought, yep, YouTube Kids game looks like it's okay, it should be fine, it's YouTube Kids. Sliced into the middle of it was a video depicting how to self-harm. And it said, if you want to hurt yourself, you don't slice across, you slice your wrist down. And so it was actually showing how to do that and then laughed and said, go on, do it. The child came to the parent and said, Mummy, there's something strange in my video. But they dealt with that. And he said, I don't understand. What are they talking about? Why would I hurt myself? So all of those conversations. But what it made me realize was, you know, our children are being exposed to this at a younger age. Researchers are exposed, they're being exposed to pornography, much more violence. We need to give our children the tools and skills to navigate that. And that's what my PhD is looking at. There's a survey that's going out to families of preschoolers saying, look, have you heard of these things or how do you teach your kids about this? So asking about that. But then I'm also interviewing families and the preschool children themselves to find out what they know about how to keep themselves safe online. My background being early childhood, that's where I've focused. But I know we need to start, and it's not about banning phones. It's not about banning iPads. It's about being selective. We wouldn't give our children books like the Twilight series when they're in primary school. So we need to navigate and help our children understand, whether it be through parental mediation, which is them mediating what's on your screen or things like that. That's the sort of stuff we need to start teaching. And that's why I love the work you're doing and talking about the critical literacy.
Given what we know about the introduction of digital devices, I mean, it's happening in schools. We've got children who have got iPads, laptops, access to computers, and it's mandatory these days. How can we try and catch up? Because obviously those skills aren't being taught as part of the education our children are getting.
And that's one of the things we need to be really cognizant of. A lot of schools are now BYOD, which is bring your own device. And this starts possibly from grade three. And I know I've actually worked with teachers and I've said, for some of the students I work with, yes, they can bring their own device, but they know how to navigate around that device to get through blockers, to play games. And I've been watching and observing these students from behind when they're like, sitting in the back of the classroom, and I can see, now this has been in primary school, in high school, classes are being taught and these children are playing all sorts of games. And so I had to say to teachers, look, we need to be aware of what's going on, particularly on their own devices. So as parents, we need to look at and say, okay, what are we doing? I know in the States at the moment, in some of the European countries, there, and I'm not saying this is the answer, but they're actually taking devices out of classrooms and out of schools. I don't want to not skill our children for the future. This is not, again, this is not about all technology is bad. What it's saying is, how do we give them the skills and the tools that they will need? Because it's like putting a child in a candy shop. If you choose to do that, you will most likely have a sick child by the end. They will take everything they can, because primary school children aren't particularly good at self-regulating or self-monitoring. So that's what we have to do for children with the internet and with technologies. It's looking and saying, how do we teach them to self-regulate, to self-monitor? Now, again, with your discussion, and this is coming back to your work, with teenagers and with older children, their prefrontal cortex is much more developed. As for younger children, I love, and I know I've heard you talk about what your daughter's done, I love what she's done and how she's put boundaries around that. That's what we need to be doing. So we have to be developmentally appropriate, whatever we do.
We didn't have internet access until they were 18. One, I didn't really need it and I wasn't a big social media consumer. And in those days, it was MySpace and very early days of Facebook. But I look at it now and I think, you know, I dodged a bullet because I couldn't afford to buy them a device. I could barely afford my own. And so the onus was on them to get employed, to be old enough, 18-year-old, to have the legal responsibility of owning a device and having to sign a document for it, but also of publishing online. But I'm more interested in how we get to what you were just talking about, right? Which is empowering children, empowering parents, empowering teachers. I've been reading more and more about the stresses on teachers particularly, and especially parents, in how much they have to navigate these days. So what's the answer? I mean, can we keep introducing topics that teachers have to teach, or should we be outsourcing that kind of thing and bringing in experts in those fields?
I guess it really depends, because there's not a one size fits all that fits everybody around how they want to manage this. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Teachers, there's been so much outsourced to teachers now, whether it be manner, social, emotional, and learning, all of these sorts of things, because of the changes in society, that right now, it's almost too hard to squeeze something else in. However, there's also, and you and I have talked about this before, and my husband and I talk about this because he teaches digital design, digital technologies to kids around the state. And I often say to him, where's the critical literacy piece? And he said, it's actually not in the curriculum. And this is something we need to be looking at. Chantal Constis, about 5 years ago, when this whole discussion around consent started, that was consent and verbal consent and in-person consent. We now have to look at and say, this is now digital. Like the things they're creating are digital. The things parents are sharing about their child being, like I think of the things that I shared with my family of Mitchell being naked in a bath when he was little, like tiny, but some parents are putting these things online and possibly not understanding. And I'm not judging parents who do that. They want to share in Facebook that with their friends and family. My concern is, to be really honest, and I know you and I have talked about this before, Facebook and Instagram, we don't have to pay to use that. And when you're not paying to use something, generally, you're the commodity that's being traded, or your information, your data, your photos, your sharing. And I know you've talked about this before, but the things you put up on Facebook or the things you create as a content creator, they then own. So it's all of these sorts of things that we need to teach kids about. I know I've got a colleague, a very good friend who works for eSafety, and they're doing a lot trying to get information out. But again, it's amplifying that message. How do we help parents who are struggling and drowning with so much information find what they need?
I'm wondering, though, why we always leave it up to government to come up with a solution for a community slash societal slash family issue. So if we see and recognise that, you know, something needs to change, surely the onus is on us to instigate that change as responsible citizens of the world.
And it's interesting you say that. So the over 16, so social media, that was driven, and I was part of a conversation in August last year that started to a certain degree with the Courier Mail, and then other people got on board around protecting our children. What does it look like? Because there have been children who've taken their own lives because of cyberbullying. And that's something we have to address. And it's something we have to actually look at and say, how do we deal with this? So there was grassroots action, and there was government response to that. And that's the issue that I think was interesting. Government responded because they could see what was happening in the public space. If people start banding together and start discussing this, and it's something that I've thought about, and I seriously am thinking about and going, okay, how do we tackle this? Do we say, get a group of people together, or say, look, we're going to meet in Sydney on this date at this time, invite people and say, let's get around the table and talk about it. We need to start understanding that government is not always about government coming to the rescue. It's about how can we, as a group of people, and I know there are great people in this space doing fantastic work, how can we get together and band together and say, let's look at saying, what can we do? I don't want to have to put it back on teachers who are incredibly tired. I don't want parents who are struggling with things already, because they don't. Often parents don't know. We didn't grow up with these digital devices.
Exactly. And it's only due to my 30 years of exposure to a variety of media that's educated me on all of the things that you just mentioned, which is copyright, plagiarism, defamation, consent, right? So I was really surprised when delivering a workshop at a literature festival recently to teenagers in their senior years, how unaware they were of any of those things and their legal responsibility. I mean, you're publishing to a worldwide media platform, which you can be held accountable. I don't know why people aren't.
And see, that's, and this is not a political conversation at all, but you look at what's just happened in Australia in the High Court. where Linda Reynolds was awarded the defamation that something defamed her online. Now, I'm not saying I agree or I disagree, but what I am saying is that the rule of law said that this is defamatory. And the reason I was interested in that was because as a teacher, there are sometimes, not that I have been subjected to this, but there are sometimes things put up on Facebook about our schools, about us as teachers personally. And it's now looking and saying, you know, people need to be held responsible. And young people, I guess this is what I'm concerned about. It's about their footprint. So if you think back possibly to late last year or the year before, from a private school in Melbourne, chanting on train about what they'd like to do to women, that video went viral. If any of those young men can be identified in that video, and then possibly down the track, recruitment agencies or companies that they're looking at working for look at their past history, there's going to be a significant issue for them that I don't actually think that they've even considered.
Well, not only that, they're not even of legal age to be held accountable. This is my problem with people under 18 being on social media, putting anything there, to tell you the truth. And even this month, we had an example of it's not just words, but our actions that can be judged, with that CEO at a tennis game who took the hat from the player that he was giving to a child. Now, his business was affected by that. His company took a 15% drop almost overnight because of the backlash on social platforms.
This is the sort of thing we all have to be aware. And I often say to people, would you let somebody come in and vomit the most vile abuse onto your children in your lounge room? And they go, why would you say that? And I said, because this, and I'm holding up my phone, this is a connection to the world that they can find that on, or people can find them on. And again, I'm not saying that everybody is a predator. They're not. But predators know where young children go. This is something we have to be aware of. I know, again, you ask, do I do this? I was working as a child in grade six. They were neurodiverse. And at the time, he was playing this massive multiplayer online game. And he came to me and I said, oh, what did you get up to last night? Oh, played this game until 2 a.m. in the morning. And I met a friend. And this friend said they were from Sweden and all of this sort of thing. And I said to him, I had to really make it very clear that that may not be the case. And the problem I've got is that if kids have things in their bedroom where there are identifying factors or things like that, they don't know that they're making themselves targets. So, Kim, I wholly and solely agree with you. We need to be doing something about this. How? I'm not exactly sure, other than by banding together with other people who are interested and talking about it more, making, as you said, these were 11 and 12, grade 11 and 12 students that didn't understand there ultimately that they could be held responsible and accountable. So it's a huge topic. And I know we've skirted around the edges. We've tried to come to some ideas, and it's not an easy fix. It's going to take a lot of people thinking together, possibly brainstorming, nutting ideas out. And it's not about handing sole responsibility, because ultimately, and it's interesting, a researcher I really admire in the UK, her name's Sonia Livingston, Professor Sonia Livingston, and she talks about the responsibilization of parents. And what that is taking from government and handing it to parents. Oh, it's your responsibility. Absolutely, there is some responsibility on parents. But there is also a lot of responsibility on government, because we don't allow children to smoke. Do we allow children to go and buy guns or cigarettes or things like that, or drive a car? We wait for those ages. So it's not just about responsibilizing others. It's actually saying, how as a society, how as a community, can we take a grassroots level? And also then identifying people like yourself who are doing a great job and amplifying those voices.
Well, that's exactly what they need, because the generations that are coming through education systems now are the ones who will lead us out of this. But we need to empower them to ethically, with integrity, raise their voices about the issues they're concerned about. The generations that are in their 20s and 30s now who were introduced to digital media wish they'd never had anything to do with it at a young age. So if we can't learn from the past, we've got a real problem moving towards the future. Recently, through Book Week, it was identified in an article I was reading that there are children in year five who are now using someone else's ideas, work, basically copying and pasting or getting AI to write for them without any creative input at all. Where are we headed? So maybe we need to discuss AI.
And Kim, that's really interesting because what they're doing functional magnetic fMRIs, which are, they put people in MRI or they look at the brain activity, and it is showing that people using AI have less brain activity. So there's research around that and what worries me. But again, you touched on something that's critically important, and that is the lived experience. So when people are talking about, or in the mental health field these days, it's very important to have people who have lived experience in education and for people who've had disability. I always say, you know, the best people to bring back to talk to teachers about what it's like for a student with disability in their classroom is somebody who's experienced it, and to come back and say, this was my lived experience. This is what I would have preferred to have had happen for me. That you hit on, which is now that children, young people in their late teens, 20s, are saying, this is what it meant for me. This is what I'm concerned about. This is what I didn't like. It's that lived experience that's going to create such an eye-opening event for whether it be parents, teachers, or whatever. When you hear it from somebody else's mouth about, this is what it meant for me, or this is what happened, that is so incredibly powerful.
It's a shame we have to wait until we've had the detrimental impacts of something to be made aware, but if that's the way it has to be, we probably should start learning today. Carrie Sutton, it's always a pleasure to chat with you, and I do believe we have more to discuss around the digital child.
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Author, speaker, and early childhood consultant, Carrie Sutton, who believes we should all be committed to raising digitally responsible children. Carrie has helped over 25,000 parents, educators, and other people who care for kids develop the skills and confidence to promote positive mental health habits in their homes, schools, and early childhood facilities. To discover more about Carrie's work, go to her website, carriesutton.com. That's carriesutton.com. You'll also find shared resources and articles on her social media accounts. As always, the links are in the show notes just for you, as are the links to connect with me, subscribe to my newsletter, and purchase my early childhood approved books, including Huggle Snuggle Cuddle, that will spark conversations about connection, consent, and body autonomy, or Embracing Change and Nature with Flutterby Butterfly, Growing Food Maybe in Grandpa's Garden, and Dietary Choices Starting with Megan the Vegan. Take care, and let's try to be the change we want to see in the world.